everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. It's a beautiful day, and you should see the lineup of carbohydrates and
getting
alcohol.
Getting ready for Thanksgiving.
In this studio. My God, there goes that diet. So we got a great show today. Susan Sadagova is the Director of Strategic Development for Foreign Policy Magazine. They're hosting a big summit called the Food Forever Solutions Summit, and it's all to address and discuss pressing issues facing our global food system. Although I think we might have solved it with all the food that's in the studio today. That's just a guess.
Just come here and then you'll eat.
Javier Arze is the founder of Huntsman Specialty Game and More. It's a field-to-table wild game company. We're going to hear all about that. Sounds like some hunting to me. Susie and Bill Menard are in. They own Via Umbria in Georgetown. Great place to go for Umbrian, that is Italian, for you the folks who don't know. Great gift ideas. They have a great restaurant there. We're going to hear all about basically the holidays in Italy, right in Georgetown. Let's see. Who else have we got? Oh, the Butter Chicken Company is here. Assad Sheikh is here. Butter Chicken is a fast casual concept that opened up just in October down on 18th Street, and he has brought food in, too. Oh, my God.
Okay, and we've got drinks in studio.
Oh, boy, Dan Ziegler. Dan's here. He's the founder of Chaco Spirits. He's got Chaco Jalapeno Aguardiente, which is a sugarcane-based liqueur. Liquor, baby. All right. Yeah. We're going to be drinking that, too. But first, we're going to go talk to Mitch Berliner at Central Farm Markets. We're not going to because he didn't get back on the phone. So we're going to jump over Mitch and talk to Dan.
Hey, Dan, come on up to that mic.
All right.
All righty.
So how's a nice boy like you end up with jalapeno-based whatever, liquor. I don't even get it. What is this stuff?
So it's a jalapeno-infused aguardiente, which is the national drink of Colombia. It's a South American sugarcane alcohol. So I went down to Colombia on vacation with some college buddies of mine a few years ago, found out about the kind of liquor, fell in love, and came back home to D.C. And for a couple years, I was moonshining right out of my kitchen.
But what made you decide to start making it? Like, was there nothing else available? Or?
Yeah, I thought all the existing stuff that was spicy on the market tasted kind of very artificial and or was too spicy, not spicy enough. So it started just as a hobby, having my friends and my family be my guinea pigs. And as more and more of them were like, hey, man, this stuff is legit. I figured out the business side, the licenses, the permits, everything like that. And I launched about 4 years ago and quit my job 3 years ago to go full time with it.
So tell us about what's in the spirit, like what exactly we're looking at. Don't look at it. Look at me.
Yep. So we got two spirits.
It's radio.
So the original. So the original, the OG is clear. It's unaged. It's distilled from sugarcane. So technically, if we had to put it in one of the five majors, it would fall under the rum family. Okay. A lot of people, when they taste it with the jalapeno, they want to put it in tequila. But technically, with the sugarcane, it's under the rum family.
Okay.
So it's really nice and smooth up front. You get a little bit of sweetness
in
that sugar cane.
What's the alcohol content?
35% on the original, 40% on the barrel age.
Okay.
So the original is what I launched 4 years ago. The barrel age I actually just launched about a month and a half ago.
Congratulations.
Aged in used bourbon barrels. Yeah, thank you.
So where's your distillery?
So I don't have my own distillery. It's not legal out of my kitchen, unfortunately.
Or your bathtub or the sink.
Exactly. So to go legal and everything, I found a guy in Iowa, of all places. I go out there. I do every batch using my myself, using his equipment, his permits, and everything like that. Throw it on a pallet, and it meets me back here. But actually, just recently, I did sign a lease on a distillery space in D.C.
Cool.
So I'm working on getting the permits and everything like that. Right now, still just kind of
bootstrapping
it.
Well, why don't you pass around the original, and we'll all get a sip, and then when we come back to you later in the show.
Tell everybody, Dan's parents thought he was going to be a doctor.
Okay. So. When we come back later in the show, we'll talk about what we're tasting and everything about that.
So all right, so while we're waiting to get Mitch on the phone, let's start talking to Susan Sadagova, who is with Foreign Policy Magazine. The Food Forever Solutions Summit sounds fascinating. What drove Foreign Policy Magazine to put this thing together in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Very, very excited to be here. So just to kind of give you a brief overview of the summit and what it is about. Mm-hmm. We actually, as I'm sure you know this better than I do, there's so many food events out there, big conferences.
You have a nice soft voice. I'm going to move your mic closer.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Just so many food events out there talking about the challenges in global food security space, right?
So as well, food security, food waste, sustainability, exactly. Like all these buzzwords are out there. And you're right, there's a ton of panels. But nobody knows what's happening. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. That's a good point. So you could have a conference that would last a week or even more just talking about food security. Mm-hmm. So what we did at Foreign Policy was that we actually sat down for, I would say, 2 weeks thinking through how we can put together an event that would be different from everything else that's out there. But at the same time, it would actually have some results, impact, because, you know, you can bring together like 20, 50 speakers just talking about food security, right?
Right.
So the concept we came up with is that instead of talking about the many challenges that are out there in food security space, we want to pick 3 or 4 challenges and build the entire summit around the solutions to those challenges. So instead of how we're doomed, which we could be in by 2050, because, you know, there's climate change that's impacting crop diversity and all that, but how can you solve those problems?
Is this on a global scale you're talking
about? It is a global. Foreign Policy is a global media company. 50% of our audience is outside of U.S., so this is very much a global conversation. Our speakers are global speakers, global experts. So what we are trying to do, and we feel like we've already accomplished that, is that we are not just having a solutions conversation with one segment of food or ag supply chain. We are not having a conversation with only private sector or with only farmers or with only government agencies. We're actually bringing everyone together, and that's the key part. So we have a farmer on the same panel with a big corporation, with a congressman or a regulator talking about the solutions that they bring to the challenge. And there are several topics that we've selected. Obviously, one of them is biodiversity and sustainable food systems. Mm-hmm. We have food security in a carbon-constrained world and climate impact on that. Mm-hmm. We have a challenge called sustainable, you know, disrupting the food industry and how new companies are actually coping with the changing landscape of supply chain. So these are kind of the main topics that we're going to focus
on. So it's an all-day symposium. Right?
Yeah, no, it's from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m.
Okay, that's okay.
It has 2 elements. So that's the main part, the Solution Summit. And I would like to highlight some of the key speakers we have. We've got TV personality and chef Carla Hall, who will do the keynote of the event. Mm-hmm. We have Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, who's really a big champion in that space. We have a couple of congressmen. We have USDA representative. We have big companies like Bayer Crop Science, Pepsi, some of these big players in space. We have a farmer from Maryland coming and talking about the solutions that he brings to the table as well.
So is the hope that everybody will speak but then sort of sit together and work on actual solutions, or is it still just presenting the problem?
Right. No, so that's the key. So the task, every speaker has a homework. Don't come to us with the problem. We already know what the problems are.
Right.
Bring the solutions that your field brings to the table. So if you're a farmer, bring your solution. If you're a big corporation, what's your solution?
Right.
Well, what about, because it used to be said that we, and I think we still do, have enough food in the U.S. to feed everybody, but there's so much food waste that actually 40 million people go to bed hungry every night.
Right.
Is food waste part of the conversation?
Well, so that's the challenge. Like I said, there were so many food challenges we had to pick, only 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. Food waste is a topic that we'll focus on during next year's summit, which is scheduled for May 2020 around UN Biodiversity Day. So, but we'll touch upon food waste because we have speakers who really specialize in that field.
And let's talk about, you have this other like evening event.
Yeah.
That, I don't know, can the public participate in that?
So the space is limited. We'll be able to host only 200 people, and I'm glad you brought it up. In fact, we do have some space available. If anyone listening right now is very keen to attend, we invite you to check the website, foreignpolicy.com/events, and you can request an invitation.
Right, but they don't know what the event is, so can you explain it?
Absolutely. So that's the second part of the initiative, right? Mm-hmm. It's called Food Forever Experience. Food Forever Experience is essentially an awareness-raising campaign that is focused on, getting people think more creatively about biodiversity of crops. I'm just going to put some numbers out there to kind of put this whole thing into perspective.
That would be great.
We have around 30,000 varieties of plants in the world right now. And you and I, everyone, we're using only 150 plants every day in like cooking, chefs are using only 150. And 60% of our calories is essentially coming from four crops. That's rice, soy, corn, and wheat. Mm-hmm. But there's so many out there that we are not using. And that's what Food Forever campaign is about. We're partnering with them. It's part of our Crop Trust organizations, a nonprofit based out of Europe, and we're partnering with them as well. But the whole campaign is about preserving biodiversity of crops for future generations. So what's happening is that we have amazing list, amazing lineup of up to 10 chefs, very famous chefs from DC area, and I can name some of them. Mm-hmm. They're actually donating their time to cook the food of the future. So each chef will get an ingredient. I don't even know what they are because we don't use them, like algae or teff or sea kelp or, you know, some of this. I don't know. I have no idea what they are, what they taste like. But they're going to use create a food recipe using those ingredients, and they'll serve it to our guests.
That's amazing. Well, I think it's so important for people to understand what biodiversity means as a part of this conference. And, you know, understanding that they're just like seafood sustainability, right?
Right.
So, you know, people eat salmon or tuna.
Right.
You know, we all know just like some fish, but there's all these other fish that are really important for us to eat to keep everything sustainable. It's the same with the grains.
Exactly. So sea kelp is one of them I would mention. It's an ingredient we don't know, we know nothing about, but it's an ingredient very much we can use every day. So chefs are actually going to use those to cook those.
Well, what's interesting, one of your stats here is that 60% of the world's caloric intake comes from four crops only, rice, wheat, soy, corn. Right, wait. But things have sort of worked their way into, like, you know, people that eat sushi eat seaweed now.
When
I was growing up, if you said we're having seaweed, it was part of our dinner.
But that's not enough. So that's the thing. So climate, so I mean, UN, you may have heard, released this report earlier this year, and climate has actually a much more accelerating effect on biodiversity than anticipated, and that's a big problem. So what we want people to do is really think more creatively about other ingredients that are out there. You're right. I mean, we use seaweed in like
sushi,
but there's so many out there. It doesn't have to be sea-related plants. There's so many plants out there that we don't really, like I said, algae. Like, again, I don't even know what it looks like, just to be fair with you.
But
it looks like green goop.
Well,
probably. Maybe something you wouldn't, you know, go into store and buy if it was available. I don't even know if it's available in stores, but we want people to think, like, there are so many plants out there that you can actually use. They're good for you. They're healthy.
I love that.
And yeah, and you should definitely come and check out Taste the Food.
Okay, so we have the event in the evening. There are some tickets available.
Yes.
And then maybe after the symposium, we can bring you back in studio and you can tell us what some of the results were.
Yeah, absolutely.
About some of the conversation.
Absolutely. We'll have a big report. Yeah, we'll have a big report about solutions that will come out of the event. So
excellent.
Why don't we take a break now? We'll come back and talk for 2 minutes, a little bit about Foreign Policy Magazine, which is so interesting.
Okay, great. This is David and Nikki Nellis. It's Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Susan, before we let you go, let's talk a little bit about Foreign Policy Magazine, which is a fascinating periodical.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So Foreign Policy Magazine has been around for 50 years. It's known as a magazine, but we're mostly online right now. Mm-hmm. So most of our content is delivered via our website that has 4 million unique visitors every month. And we're 50% global, 50% US-based, meaning, you know, there are people in Europe, Africa, Latin America who read Foreign Policy every day, policymakers, global companies, and things like that. And there are several areas that we focus on, which is defense, security, trade, sustainable development, climate, food security are some of those. And we do write about those issues, but we also do events and convenings about them.
But what's great, because I actually have been to the website a couple of times. It's different points of view, too. It doesn't you know, carry the banner for any particular, you know, political point of view or anything else. It's ecumenical.
Absolutely. So that's one thing that we pride ourselves in, that we represent both, if you will, points of view. So we represent all perspectives. So we don't take a stand. So it's pretty much.
All right. Well, tell everybody where they can find out all this information.
Please. Yeah, absolutely. So if you, foreignpolicy.com is our website, but you want to find out more about the event, please go to foreignpolicy.com/events and you'll find out more about the food event and all the other big summits that are coming.
All right.
Thank you so much. Dan, step back up to the mic.
Dan, tell us about this jet fuel.
All right.
No, I love it. It's super spicy and delicious.
Yeah, so that's the original there, unaged, and you're going to get a lot of really nice and smooth up front, a little bit of that sweetness from the sugarcane,
mm-hmm.
and then a second later that spicy pop kicks in from the jalapeno.
Right, but so how do you advise people to drink this? Is this something you serve on ice?
Well, they're not driving. Right.
Okay. But no, do you know what I mean? Like, is it a cocktail? What do people, how do you recommend it?
So it kind of goes across the board. I love it by itself, neat or on the rocks, but it's definitely kind of intended for cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
So with it neat. Like I said, very smooth from an alcohol perspective. For some people, it's a little bit too spicy.
Right.
It's not just spicy to be spicy. You get the really vegetal kind of greenness to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as cocktail goes, there's classic cocktails and specialty cocktails on the classic
right.
side. Margaritas. I'm making a riff on a mule here today, a little kind of specialty mule. But yeah, margs, mojitos, Bloody Marys, daiquiris.
Oh,
it can really be a vodka, tequila, or rum.
I love this for a Bloody Mary. That makes a ton of sense. That
yep,
sounds like
no
a
better
great
way to
idea.
Wake up in the morning than a nice Chacho
right.
Bloody.
Okay, so what are we trying next?
All right, so next is the barrel-aged version.
Okay.
So like I said, I just launched this about a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same juice as original Chacho, but a little bit more alcohol. And then
what does Chacho mean?
So Chacho, so for the viewers, you can't, or the listeners, you can't see this, but on the label, very simple label, just Chacho and a llama on the front. So when I was in Colombia, I was actually riding a llama through
named
the streets
Chacho.
Of Bogota.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, drunk on aguardiente for my first time when the light bulb went off and I got the whole idea to do this thing. And that llama's name was Chacho.
I love it.
So I figured it was only right to name my booze after my
Did
man
you get
Chacho
a speeding
the
ticket?
Llama.
I guess.
All right, so while you're pouring the next one for us all to taste, we're going to do a little
we're going
trip
to Italy.
To Italy.
Andiamo in Italia. Tutti,
yes.
tutti.
We're going to go to Umbria.
So Bill and Susie Menard have created a whole world for themselves. I mean, these are two Yanks who fell in love with Italy in college, right? Do I remember the story right? Or
they're more in law school.
Law school. Okay. And they gave up law and all of that. And first they created a store called Via Umbria. And now they've got a whole context.
No. The store was not first. You're just making up the information.
But I'm saying I'm jumping
ahead. I don't
ahead.
Even know why
I mean,
you're bothering.
They fell in love
like,
with
why don't
Italy.
You let them tell their story?
Tell your story. Come on.
We actually were going to start off by saying, well, you really know our story. And so
I know your story.
Do that. She doesn't know anything.
But, you know, for visitors to Via Umbria, which is in Georgetown, by the way, on Wisconsin mm-hmm. Avenue.
So I was right about
15,
that.
25, you're absolutely right. It could be a bit confusing because we're a little bit of everything. But the name Umbria is a region in Italy that we've fallen in love with. But we love everything about all of Italy. I know you guys have traveled there and enjoyed it. And so we've got what may be a little bit of a confusing thing with a market with meat, cheese. We've got a restaurant, a cafe. We do chef's table.
We've got a wine store.
Wine store. I mean, a lot of imported goods. And we're going to show you some of the stuff we brought back. We actually also have a farmhouse in Umbria that we rent out.
Oh,
by the
rub
week.
It in, Bill. Come on.
Exactly.
Okay, here's where it gets better is we just got back from our harvest tour. And that's where we found all this great stuff to bring home with us.
So, Will, you guys take people to your house, right? So
correct.
You do trips over there. When we went to Umbria 3 years ago, I can't believe
it's been
3 years
long.
Ago. I know. But when we went, you guys really were instrumental in helping us make
oh my God,
that trip
yeah, you made
fantastic
the vacation,
because
right?
you hooked us up with fantastic guides in Perugia yeah.
and
Assisi. And
we went truffle hunting.
Correct.
And we went yeah. truffle hunting. I mean, you guys really helped us see parts of Umbria that I don't think we would have seen
exactly
if we just went. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have a great base to get around from where our house is, and within 30 minutes, max an hour, you can do all and see all and spend, like a week is not enough to do everything
no.
that you want to do.
Well,
absolutely.
Now that you've made everybody in the studio hate you.
your last trip, because uh-huh. the store has, like, you have gorgeous linens, you have beautiful ceramics, but you also have lots of food stuff, many of which you brought in today.
Indeed.
How do you go about finding the products that you want to bring in?
Well, first of all, Nikki, if we're not eating, drinking, and shopping,
right.
we're not working.
What are you doing? Right, exactly. This sounds like my kind of job.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
the bread that you're tasting, we toasted, and we just put on it some of the olio novello, which is the oil from this year's harvest. So
okay.
those olives were on the trees back in October. They were mm-hmm. picked, pressed, and air-shipped over. So unlike wine, olive oil is best when it's young. So mm-hmm. it doesn't get any fresher than this.
No,
and we're one of the
so
few
delicious.
Stores in the States that actually brings over the new oil.
Right,
so we've
indeed.
Got, and we've been there. We watched them pick it. So we know it's from Italy, and we know which farm it's from.
And you hear about, you know, first pressing and whatnot, but it's only that just means that they pressed it and they didn't press it a second time. What we got in front of us is really available only for a couple, about a month or so. It's they harvest in October, which is what we got to see. And these are like the earliest kind of immature olives. And so it comes up with an olive oil that is just a little bit more intense and absolutely beautiful.
And for those of you who aren't watching us either on Insta Story or Facebook Live, they just doused a piece of bread in the olive oil.
Oh, yeah.
You don't need to do anything else with it. Yeah. It's
and
delicious.
And I just ate a piece of bread doused in the olive oil, and it's good.
We're on the carb train.
And we're on the carb train.
And I guess
exactly.
One thing.
Italy.
If you're adventurous.
And for starters, keep in mind, like in the next 30 days, you're going to eat carbs. You're going to eat a lot
it
of different
well
foods.
Good ones.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
Can we talk a little about panettone? Because ultra uber traditional panettone is with the candied fruit, which I'd rather die than eat.
Exactly.
Yeah. But this is
panettone
with chocolate.
We've got, I think, 40 different kinds of panettone that we brought in.
Yeah, everybody dig in.
A lot of people think of panettone kind of like a fruitcake on steroids.
Yeah. Right.
To some extent it is.
It's
but
a gift that keeps on giving because you keep regifting
it. It's an amazing product.
No.
Susie gone and visited the company Louisson.
Again, I had to go to the bakery and eat all the panettone.
Yeah,
right.
We've got an incredible video on our website via Umbria.com, which if you go to the panettone page, they actually show them making this. So this stuff rises for like 48 hours, the dough.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell it lasts forever and it's delicious, and particularly when you get chocolate in it,
as opposed to candied fruit, you know what you should do with it?
Right.
French toast with panettone.
Well,
like, forget the brioche or challah.
And enjoyed it. But keep in mind, like, we have the classic panettone, so with the candied fruits, but we also have with white chocolate and lemon peel. We have with candied chestnuts. We have with meringue. And then we also have my new favorite, which is the salted chocolate and caramel.
I mean, that sounds delicious.
This is delicious. The panettone with meringue is killer.
On your most recent trip, what was one or two things that you found that you were like, I can't believe we haven't carried this before? Was there anything new that you were really blown away by?
We're always intrigued when we go over there about, like, every little town you go to is going to have their own specific thing that's there, that is their tradition. So whether you've had, like, amaretti cookies from one city, when you try them from another place, they're going to taste a little bit different and they're going to have a different thing. So one of the things we brought today are the amaretti cookies in the Italians can package like nobody's business.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a hostess gift or teacher's gift or something, all you have to do is come in, pick one thing up, put it in a bag, and it's wrapped and ready to go.
Well, you know, actually, like the panettone, like, it never occurred to me to give a panettone as a teacher gift, but it is literally perfect. They're always wrapped beautifully. It's a gorgeous gift.
Yeah, how pretty is that?
And same thing with those amaretti cookies. Those are also perfect. Is that a calendar?
We've got the advent calendar.
Okay.
So
yeah.
We've got them for kids and grown-ups.
Yes. And we drink wine. But, you know, very quickly, a lot of people are not familiar. Umbria, we used to refer to Umbria as South Tuscany.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the province, we who know Italy.
Okay.
But it's where Perugia and Assisi are, and it's within, you know, an hour of Florence, and it's a really
and
still
half.
Undiscovered.
Yeah,
not an hour and a half, an hour.
It depends on how fast you drive.
But my point is,
it's
home,
a part of Italy that is really almost still, not completely, but almost invisible to, you know, the horde of American tourists.
You're absolutely right. It's a gorgeous place with gorgeous people. It's what people love about Tuscany, the countryside, sort of the culture and all that. You find that all in Umbria, but it's much more authentic still because it hasn't been discovered and overrun. I would say, you know, we just got back from the trip in Umbria where we take the tours a couple times a year, but then we rent out the house the rest of the year. We've got a nice staff, a couple that takes care of the property. They came over to our daughter's wedding in September.
Congratulations.
Along with, thank you.
It was amazing.
About a dozen other.
As we say in Italy, mazel tov.
They came along with about a dozen other of our suppliers and people that we've built relationships with over the years. And it really is, it's not just a business. It really is, it's not really a family, but it's connections.
It is.
Yeah.
And
so
we've
nice.
Met a bunch of those people.
We have.
Which wines did you bring? Let's talk about the wines.
Is that the party?
Is that the party
wine?
It's one of the party
and
wines.
The parties were at the
P-A-R-D-I,
wedding.
It's P-A-R-D-I, not T-Y.
That's correct.
A party party.
Yeah. But we brought these in particular because we've got a good selection right now in the store of large format bottles. In other words, not
Which
just single
great.
Bottles,
yeah.
double
for
bottles.
Parties.
Particularly around the holidays.
Uh-huh.
And so these are priced.
Is that the Sargentino?
This one's Sargentino, yeah. And then this one's a Barolo. And large format.
Barolo.
They're pretty good.
But Barolo is...
Oh, we do things from all over Italy.
But that's
Italy,
not Umbrian.
It is not.
We do from all around.
But, let's wait. Let's do a quick plug for the party wines with P-A-R-D-I, which are, it's a kind of a small batch, vineyard. And we had thanks to you, the opportunity to go there and meet the family and go to the vineyard.
And check out their linens.
And check
out,
Oh,
no. They made us buy their linens, but the grandma.
And we have tablecloths at the store if anybody needs for the holidays.
But, I mean, these wines are, they're beyond reasonably priced, and they are spectacular.
Absolutely.
And these are just the baby bottles. So these are the 1.5-liter bottles, but we have 3-liter bottles. We have 6-liter bottles. So if you're looking for have like a big impact
or
a family celebration.
It.
Now, it looks like you brought sparkling, too. What kind of sparkling did you bring?
We did. This is something we've fallen in love with over the last few years. We go to Verona every year for what's called Vin Italy. It's a big wine show.
Doesn't everyone?
It's awful, isn't it?
It's work.
I do get invited every year.
Not far from Verona is a town called, a zone called Franciacorta, and they make what would be, it's an analog to champagne. It uses the same grapes and the same method, but it's actually, it's slightly different, but it is absolutely gorgeous, a little bit less expensive, incredibly elegant, and great for the holidays. And we have a huge selection of different Franciacorta producers. So come in and look for that. It's
and
really great.
We don't say that it's made in the style of champagne. We say it's made in the style of Franciacorta. Exactly. And once you try it, you'll never go back.
Well, I think it's really interesting because Prosecco has sort of been bastardized in the United States.
Yeah.
You know, it's so sweet. I think they make, for the Americans, like a sweeter Prosecco. So I'm fascinated that there's another sparkling now is more in the method.
Exactly.
But,
Prosecco itself has to be from this zone that's over toward the Venice, and the Veneto is huge. It's a huge area. So there's a huge amount of variety.
And
this
we have
is,
some dry Prosecco in addition to these amazing grapes.
I have no doubt. I'm not dissing it, but you do know what I'm talking about.
Right. Different process, different grape.
All right. Tell everybody where they can find you.
We are at 1525 Wisconsin Avenue. It's called Via Umbria. Also on the web, www.viaumbria.com.
And also you can find them on Instagram, also at Via Umbria. And I do want to give a quick shout out to your chef, Liam Lasavita, because he really does fabulous things. And I go there a lot. I sit in the cafe during lunch and work. And it's a darling place. So if you haven't been, you are missing out.
Check out our dinners at the chef's table with Liam. We actually have one coming up on the 4th of December with the couple ceramicist friends. You've met them. I think Federico was on last year.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to do a dinner at the artist table where during dinner, which they'll have dinner with you, they're going to do a painting demonstration and talk about their family. And then we're going to give away what they paint during the dinner. And everyone gets a 25% discount on their ceramics for the rest of the year.
So go to that.
Wait, we have
come to the
break.
Black Truffle dinner. And don't forget the Feast of the Seven Fishes.
Feast of the Seven Fishes. All right, guys. Thank you so much. This is David and Nikki Nellis, Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Listen to the Federal Newscast every weekday to get the latest updates on agencies, contractors, and stories affecting your pay and benefits. Every 15 minutes, mornings and afternoons on 1500 AM and streaming at federalnewsnetwork.com. Subscribe to the Federal Newscast on Podcast One or Apple Podcasts. And follow on Twitter at Federal Newscast.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Let's go back and talk to Dan Ziegler, who's an unlikely candidate to have founded Chaco Aguardiente, but he was drunk on a llama and the rest is history. Is that pretty much it?
That's exactly right.
Now,
what a story.
Why barrel age it? Is that something that they're doing in Colombia, or was it something you were like, I think this would be good age?
So that's just totally something that I kind of thought would be
a fun little experiment.
So it gets a lot of the oak and bourbon. So it's used bourbon barrels I got from a bourbon distillery down in Richmond, Virginia. You get a lot of the oak pulled through. That's what gives it the nice brown color as well. Because it's the same liquid as original Chacho, just aged in those bourbon barrels.
Yeah, I mean, not that the original isn't delicious, but it doesn't have as much of a bite. It's a lot smoother. So now, are you using this in cocktails as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So this can also be drank neat on the rocks. And a big part of the reason for this is also it's really enjoyable in the colder months. So the fall, winter approaching and stuff. That's why I really wanted to get it out in advance of October.
Sure.
So on the cocktail front, this more drinks kind of like a spicy whiskey. Again, distilled from
sugarcane.
So it's under the same rum family. But Definitely drinks like a whiskey. So I'm doing today. I'm doing an old fashioned riff. Can make awesome Manhattans, and then also kind of makes a really good daiquiri and other type rum things. But I really love it as kind of a whiskey offshoot.
Excellent. All right. Well, while you're doing that, we're going
to you are the entrepreneur's entrepreneur. And speaking of that,
speaking of entrepreneurs,
Javier Arce, was you were going to be an engineer, and now he's a huntsman.
Indeed, yes.
More than a huntsman.
He's more than a huntsman. So his business is called Huntsman Specialty Game and More, and I'm going to let you explain what you do and how it came all about.
Hi. So, David.
Hi.
Hi, Nikki.
Hi.
Thanks for having me here.
Oh, my God. We're thrilled to have
you.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
We've been talking about having you in
for a long time.
Forever, right?
I know. So, well, it's actually a simple story. Mm-hmm. I grew up, I was exposed to hunting by my dad and my uncle. So, mm-hmm. I've always enjoyed the outdoors. And being outdoors, you learn to appreciate nature. And that's pretty much what drove me into doing what I do today. Mm-hmm. Well, Huntsman is a distributing company for specialty foods. Mm-hmm. We distribute from Philadelphia down to Richmond, we are also able to ship around the country. But we sell to businesses, so we are B2B business. Our main job is to source ingredients that give chefs the opportunity to showcase their skills, but at the same time to use products that are responsibly raised, which is a very important part of my business.
Mm-hmm. So, but what kind of products are we talking about?
So,
is it all wild
we're
game?
Not just
no,
talking
no.
about...
In fact, I like to clarify.
Yes.
Really, what game means, right? Game meat. So, you have wild game, mm-hmm. which basically is meats from animals that live in the wild, mm-hmm. and can be hunted, but generally cannot be sold in the food industry, with certain exceptions. One of those is wild boar. Wild boar can be sold. It needs to be inspected and processed just like domesticated pigs.
But is that in the United States?
That's in the United States, yes. So there's...
I don't think of wild boar in Italy. Like, that's the only
indeed,
place
but,
I think
but,
wild
but
boar
you,
is from.
You might be surprised to know that there's over a million wild boar just in Texas. And it's actually a problem because they are destroying.
I mean, in Arkansas, the team's nickname is the Razorbacks, and they're all running around out
correct.
There in the woods.
All right.
Too.
Okay.
So
she's
yes.
a city girl, folks.
Yeah,
so
totally.
that's actually truly wild. If you mm-hmm. do have wild boar, you're eating a wild pig because
right.
that's what that is.
Right.
Then we import or the wild, truly wild game meat like. Mm-hmm. Wood pigeon,
okay,
grouse,
mm-hmm.
Venison or deer.
Well, I was
going
to say, I think when
Scotland.
People think of game, like that's where their heads go.
Yes.
They think buffalo. Do you know
correct.
What I mean? Like that's where their head
yes.
goes to.
So,
rabbit.
So you have wild game being mm-hmm. those, and then you have farm game meat.
Okay.
And there we have, you know, you can farm deer, bison, alligator, rabbit, squab, mm-hmm. whale. Pheasants, partridge, elk, all these meats are farmed and they have to be processed the same way as any other meats. And they're farmed. They mm-hmm. live in a farm.
But are they, because of the nature of the breeds, are they farmed more responsibly? Or that's something that you, when you're going to work with people, that's what your priority
well,
is?
Well, so this is, here's what happens. Most people are used to eating... just a few proteins. Like, David, I heard you say that you're a meat and potato kind of guy, right?
That is my rep, yes.
Not hers, not Nikki's.
No,
but
no,
it's
yours. She's a little more
cheesy. But here's the thing. It's not just you. It's the majority of Americans. We're used to eating meats that are factory farm produced, mm-hmm. right? So what happens with game meats is they usually come from small farms. To give an example, our quail is produced by a small farm in Richmond, Beaver Creek Farms. He produces anywhere between 300, 350 quail a week. That's nothing, right? Mm-hmm. These are hand done. What happens is usually people that are doing this type of farming, they're going to be small farmers. Now, the big agro industry is trying to get into it because the American palate is changing a little bit. People are a little bit more open-minded to try different things. But But there's still a lot more work to do. Your earlier guest mentioned, biodiversity,
mm-hmm.
and this plays a huge role in that because it gives people the opportunity to try different proteins that may be better for the planet. It can be like venison, for example, can be a type of meat that very, very few people are allergic to. So it gives the option to certain people to have meat that otherwise they wouldn't be able to eat.
But don't you think part of it, you know, the culture has changed. So like in maybe the 1800s or 1900s, people ate all sorts of meat because they hunted for their protein instead of just picking it up in the grocery store.
Well, that's how we evolved. That's why we have the brain we have.
Let's have squirrel for dinner.
But, you know, but the question is now, how do we sort of educate people, more of the general public, not just the people who eat in the fancy restaurants where you will see rabbit and venison and buffalo on the menu or get sausages made that way. How do we educate the general public that not only is the meat delicious and healthier and available, but like how to do it at home.
So,
you know what I mean?
I think that's actually an excellent question.
And I feel like you should hand me a piece of something on there, don't you?
I want to make sure before we...
Here's one thing I want to, you know, and this is part of that change that you're talking about. What Game Meats offer is... just let me explain what I have in here.
Okay.
I have duck pastrami.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Duck prosciutto.
Is that what I'm eating?
Duck salami.
Mm-hmm.
No, and this is actually pork, and it comes from the Mangalitsa pig. So the reason I brought in here is that, for example, there's people that have whether there may be a dietary restrictions, whether they're religious or allergies or all that. This is pork.
Okay.
The rest is duck. So you can produce. Chefs do like making pastramis and prosciuttos and things like that. This gives people the opportunity to taste these meats that otherwise they wouldn't be able to without, you know, compromising their own values. So I think that's one thing that Game Meats offer, you know, besides the fact that they're usually leaner than conventionally raised beef or chicken.
Mm-hmm.
But how do we educate? And going back to your question is, the main thing about just about everything we do is to be an open-minded kind of person, right? And to live in the moment and understand what really we're doing every time we put something in our mouth.
Right.
Because, sure, people like steak and nice and tender and fatty and all that. But if you stop and think about what you're doing, you know, where did it come from?
To be a thoughtful eater.
You probably don't know. Nobody knows where that
Mickey
piece of
knows
meat comes from.
Right where this is coming from.
We know not only do we know where it comes from, we probably know a couple of generations back on those birds.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Unfortunately, we got to move on. But I want to make sure, particularly since you're a B2B business, that all those bees out there listening know how to find you.
Right. So my company's name is Huntsman. Specialty Game and More. And we have a website. It's huntsmangame.com.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, restaurants can find us, through a simple search of my name or the company name. But other listeners can experience and taste these foods through some of the, pretty much all top 50, 60 restaurants in the city. Pretty much carry that.
I mean, they're beautiful.
Great.
All right.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break. Why don't we take a break early?
Okay,
and then when we come back, we'll get into some more cocktails.
We'll have some butter chicken.
And then we'll have some butter chicken.
Hubba hubba.
David and Nikki Nellis will be back in just a sec.
All right. We're back on Fooding the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. And I mean, we have got such food in front of us. It's unbelievable. Before we get back to the show, I just want to thank our sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
Fabulous Mirabel Restaurant downtown, the Ottoman Taverna, two Italian eateries, Alba Osteria and Al Dente. The new Brasserie Liberté just opened up in Georgetown.
Last week?
We were just there at the opening.
Beautiful.
Good food. Good food for breakfast, too.
They're
open
breakfast,
at 8.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Profish, terrific sustainable seafood. Mm-hmm. Ivy City Smokehouse, Meat Crafters, and Central Farm Markets. And unfortunately, we weren't able to talk to Mitch today, so we'll double talk to him next week.
Yes.
All right? Okay. So, let's talk butter chicken. Asad Sheikh is an entrepreneur. I don't know if you grew up in the butter chicken business. I'm going to say that you probably didn't, but you've got a great Bombay street food operation. Talk about it a little.
David and Nikki, thanks for having me here.
Thank you for being here.
Us. It's my pleasure having coming here Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. Usually I don't get up that early Sunday, but
neither
I did for
we,
you.
But here we are.
So, well, the Butter Chicken Company has been open almost exactly, give and take, like a month, a little over a month. Mm-hmm. And the unique concept about this is that we serve only 300 servings a day. So what we do is, everybody knows, if it's Indian cuisine, they know butter chicken is one of the most popular Indian dish.
Sure.
It's true.
So we went to the source, which is Old Delhi in India, me and my chef Kumar. Mm-hmm. We learned from the originator who started making this butter chicken back in 1950s. Their grandson is doing this now. So we come in the morning, about 4 hours, we make for 300 people, and we sold out. So since the first day we opened at 11:30, we were sold out by 12:45, 1 o'clock.
Okay. Would you do, go to the pool after that? I mean,
I mean, I have other business to take care of, you know. Wow, I wish okay. I can. But this is happening for a whole month now. Mm-hmm. So 2 o'clock we sold out, sometime 3 o'clock we sold out. So the butter chicken comes with two side dishes.
Well, I want to ask, doesn't it tell you something? Shouldn't you be making more butter chicken?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to make it limited, unique. You know, I mean, if you make it more, then you
small
know,
batch butter
small
chicken.
Small batch, yeah.
Right. So, for people who are not familiar with butter chicken, can you tell us a little bit? Can we educate the public just on what it is exactly and why it's such a famous dish from India?
Yeah, butter chicken. It's with the tomato, fresh tomato, or some make with tomato puree and half cream. Mm-hmm. So these are the two main ingredients, and then ginger garlic, and then comes with some used chicken breast. Some chicken thigh,
okay.
Which is baked in a tandoor oven. Mm-hmm. So this is some of the restaurants that make it a little sweeter side, some medium and some spice. Mm-hmm. So we are right on the medium side of it. Since it started like 1950s and became so popular all around the world, butter chicken is known as one of the most popular Indian dish.
But why is it called butter chicken?
I was just going to ask you.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good question. Yeah, we do use butter in this.
I don't know if you've been here for the whole show, but I do ask really good questions.
Well, I mean, yeah, first time.
That's
I know you
obvious.
Now. So, yeah, we do use butter in this. You know, a pure butter. That's the flavor of the butter in this is very high. That's mm-hmm. why it's butter chicken.
Okay.
See, I have to ask you a good question. Now, why is it called chicken? I'm okay. just kidding.
Oh, come on.
And so when you go to your spot, What do people order? It's just butter chicken. What comes with it?
They can order butter chicken or they can order chicken tikka masala. Chicken okay. tikka masala is another popular dish in Indian cuisine. Mm-hmm. So they can choose either one of them. And they can pick two sides out of three. So one is spinach and cottage cheese. The other one is chickpeas mm-hmm. and vegetable biryani, a spiced vegetable rice.
Okay.
So they can choose any two of the side orders.
So are you finding that most of your customers are familiar with butter chicken, or they're just seeing you and stopping in and trying it for the first time?
They are familiar with butter chicken. I mean, I don't know any American who don't know butter chicken.
Right. I mean, well, especially in this region.
Yes.
I mean, it's a pretty savvy.
Well, it's also
crowd.
A very international.
Right.
Right.
It's pretty international. So, and then what about your naan? Are you making that?
Yes, we make the naan. Same thing. We come like 2-3 hours before we bake the naan in the store.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the peak hours, we have it ready for about 300 to 400 people, you know.
Okay. And then did you also bring, is that mango lassi?
Yes, mango lassi, yes. You can okay. see the mango lassi here and you can,
oh,
you can go ahead and try some butter chicken, you know. The whole studio.
Thank you.
The whole studio is a flavor of butter chicken now here.
Right. So now that you've done this, are you planning on opening up more? Like, what's your plan? What's the grand scheme here?
I have a lot of requests from our regular customers, you know, to open in different locations in downtown D.C., and I'm working with a couple of leases now.
Mm-hmm.
But same concept, 300 sold out.
So when people come in, is it made fresh for them? Like, I'm sort of confused on how it's executed.
The way we do is we open at 11:30,
okay.
So our chefs comes around 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So we make exact quantity so of 3 to 310 orders, servings.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a huge, a giant copper bowl that we keep right behind the counter,
mm-hmm.
and which is under the steam.
Mm-hmm.
So it remains pretty much a good temperature. It maintains
right.
the temperature for next 2-3 hours.
Okay.
So it's made every day. We run out, we sold out.
And that's it?
That's it, yes.
Okay, yeah. Where is your location so people know?
It's 818 18th Street Northwest, 18th okay. and I, right next to Farragut West Metro
sure.
Station.
I think you need more locations.
Yeah.
I love if you want to invest some, you know, come on right. in. Be my first franchisee, you know.
Are you franchising?
Yes, yes. Okay. I'm working on that. It probably takes another year, I guess, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal is to open each one in every state.
And just do it just as the same similar concept.
Just
we make it
concept.
Until it's done and then
correct.
Gone and gone.
Correct,
and you're
yes.
only doing lunch?
Only doing lunch, yes.
Okay. And that's the you're gonna stick with that?
Correct, yes, yes.
You're okay. gonna have to look for franchisees that aren't greedy. Let's stay open for dinner.
Right.
This
well,
is
this
delicious.
Is delicious.
Yeah, it really
Thank
is.
You so much for bringing
Thanks.
It in. It's
Thanks,
very
my
exciting.
Pleasure.
All right, tell everybody where they can find you online and once again your address.
You can't Grubhub this or any of that. You gotta come and buy it.
Yes,
right?
You come and find it. I mean, people calling and say, you know, can I get 10 butter chicken? We said no, you have to be in a line because people are standing in a line already, you know.
Right.
So,
is there a limit to the number that each person can buy?
One person at a time. Yes.
This is like
No. That wasn't his question. If
yeah,
I come in
and I want 10
and I want
orders.
To order 10.
No,
can
you
I order 10?
No.
I can't.
You can. You just had get one.
Did you ever see Seinfeld?
But what if
the
I want to get
Nazi?
Two? I can't get two?
You remember that?
I mean, two we can work with, but not 10, 15. Otherwise,
okay.
then, you know,
can
it's
you stop eating while you're on air.
Yeah. Jeez. Well, you can find us on web. It's usabutterchicken.com.
No, none for you.
Okay.
This is good.
It's usabutterchicken.com.
I got it. All right. Thank you.
All right, Dan.
Danny
come
boy.
Back up to the mic. All right, so what did you make here?
So, yeah, this is our first of two cocktails here. So this is a Moscow mule offshoot.
Uh-huh.
I call it either the Medellin mule or, in this case, a hibiscus jalapeno mule. So what uh-huh. we've got in there is original chacho, which is giving it that nice spiciness, ginger beer, which is also giving a little bit of a spice,
uh-huh.
Lime juice, and then this morning I made a hibiscus syrup.
Can we roll back a little? What were you doing in Colombia in the first place? Just hanging out?
Honestly, I was just on vacation, you know, partying, hanging out with my buddies. Just after college. I was a couple years out of college. It was one of my first trips out of the country. And,
so what did you want to be when you grew up?
So I don't even remember back in the day, but what I was, I did finance and real estate.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in the hospitality industry, the casino industry and stuff, doing corporate finance and real estate finance for different hospitality companies.
This is more fun.
This is definitely my preference here. So
now, when you in a cocktail, especially the original, I mean, it just adds such depth and flavor. It's really terrific. So when you're out showcasing this to restaurants, how do you sell it to people?
So I definitely introduce people to the spirit itself first, just because when it's in a cocktail, there's all these different ingredients going on. You don't necessarily know what would be the spirit and what would be the other ingredients.
Right.
So I introduce the liquor by itself, just like I did with y'all. And then after that, you can really taste either the spiciness itself or that mm-hmm. green kind of vegetal component. In the case of the original, that all still really shines through. And that was my biggest challenge when I was coming up with the whole formula and recipe. That's why it took me 2.5 years just to do that, is because I wanted that perfect balance of, you know, not so spicy that you can't enjoy it by itself.
Right.
But spicy enough that it really holds its legs in a cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this cocktail really showcases that.
One thing we haven't touched on is where we can find it. I mean,
So I'm in liquor stores. So DC is home base and kind of where, you know, obviously got my start and everything. So I'm in liquor stores all across DC.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in about 15 ABC stores over in Virginia and slowly getting into Maryland as well. So if your local neighborhood store doesn't have it, you should definitely chirp the owner there, try and get it in. But on my website, chachousa.com, C-H-A-C-H-O. USA.com. There's a Find Us tab that has all my locations in the DMV.
But since it's like not a liquor that a lot of people are super familiar with, how do you, are you doing demos? Like, how do you educate the public on it?
So me personally, so it's, I go, you know, kind of bar to bar with bottle in hand during the week.
Mm-hmm.
And then come weekend, the bars are too busy. They don't want you coming in unless you're just hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
So every Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, and then after this, I'll be leaving here and going to a liquor store to do exactly that, do demos.
So do demos.
I've got bottles. I'm the person, you know, you come in.
You know where
a little
else?
Sample.
Farmers markets.
So I can't quite do that yet because I don't have my own brick and mortar. You got
to
actually have,
you have to have one
here.
That's
but
true.
Very soon, when I get my own brick and mortar here open, I will absolutely be in the farmers markets.
So again, what's
well.
The 411 on the brick and mortar?
So if I've learned anything from starting up my own business, I'm absolutely not putting a date on it yet.
Okay.
So I'm hoping early 2020. opening, but I'm going to hit all kinds of.
Location?
So it's in the Fort Totten, Tacoma area.
Mm-hmm.
So Northwest DC, up by the Maryland border.
By Three Stars, right?
Yep, so there's Three Stars and Hellbender Brewery. A lot of the distilleries and breweries are over in Ivy City. We're going to be kind of doing, they are already doing their own thing, credit to them, and kind of making our own little island over there in the Fort Totten, Tacoma areas.
All right.
Well, thank you so much. Tell everybody where they can find you online and on Insta and et cetera.
Exactly. So online, ChachoUSA.com, and then on Instagram, Chacho_USA. And Chacho, again, is C-H-A-C-H-O. USA.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Got to wrap it up. Everything you heard about on the show today, you can find out all the information about it on Nikki's website, thelistareyouonit.com. Follow her on Instagram. Follow her on Twitter. Follow her on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Follow her everywhere.
Yes. All right. Well, so
not too close.
Okay. Enough. So we want to thank all the people who were in today, our sort of pre-gaming for Thanksgiving and the holidays. You certainly know what kind of spirit you should buy somebody as a gift, where you should go for some Italian treats for teacher gifts or maybe for yourself. And you should be ordering game, obviously, when you go into a restaurant because it's the right way to eat. There's an amazing food policy event. You should certainly check that out, too. And while you're eating really good food, have some butter chicken. So thank you again for everybody for coming in studio. We are off next week for the Thanksgiving holiday. But when we come back, we are going to have lots of fun in studio. Stellina, the very hot pizza place, will be in studio along with others. So thank you again to everybody. And please have a delicious and healthy and safe Thanksgiving.